From NPR News in Washington, I'm Melinda Pencava, and this is Talk of the Nation. A London extradition hearing is underway for former Chilean dictator Augusto Pinochet. Spain wants to try him for human rights abuses that occurred while he ruled in Chile. Reed Brody of Human Rights Watch hopes this sets a big precedent.
To hear the Crown prosecutors talk about torture and conspiracy is a kind of a vindication for the thousands of people in Chile who have been tortured, disappeared, killed during Pinochet's regime. So it's historic just to hear that his impunity has ended.
A noble cause pursuing justice, but where will this lead? Could any leader be brought up on charges as Pinochet may be? The Pinochet precedent, today's Talk of the Nation, after this news.
From National Public Radio News in Washington, I'm Korva Coleman. Eastern North Carolina is getting more rain. Some parts of the state have received up to 6 inches of rain, and the National Weather Service says areas along the Neuse River could get up to a foot by tomorrow. The National Guard is going to all homes in Wayne County, evacuating residents. The end of the fiscal year comes on Thursday, and Congress is moving to pass a temporary spending bill that would keep government services and programs running. NPR's Brian Naylor reports.
Congress has 13 annual spending bills to fund government operations. So far, only 4 have been sent to the president, making it necessary to pass a temporary spending bill to keep government functioning. The temporary bill will give lawmakers 3 weeks to approve the rest, but there are many obstacles down the road. Republicans remain divided over issues including dairy pricing, whether to appropriate money for a new fighter jet, and whether to allow agricultural exports to Cuba. President Clinton, meanwhile, has threatened to veto as many as 7 of the appropriations measures. The bill funding education, for instance, drops the president's program to hire 100,000 additional teachers, while another of the spending bills would eliminate the AmeriCorps program. Both sides agree it would take a miracle to resolve their differences by Thursday midnight. Republicans say that's business as usual, while Democrats argue it's evidence the majority can't govern. Brian Naylor, NPR News, the Capitol.
The Supreme Court has decided to review some controversial cases. One concerns whether grandparents have the legal right to visit grandchildren over the objections of parents. A second case will look at whether the violence against women law is constitutional. A lower court invalidated it, saying rape victims are not guaranteed the right to sue attackers for monetary damages. In a third case, the court will decide the legality of a Colorado law barring people from counseling and passing out leaflets near clinics that perform abortions. The United Nations Refugee Agency says most of East Timor is not secure enough for humanitarian aid to be brought in. A spokesman in Geneva says aid is limited to the capital, Dili, until peacekeepers can secure a wider area. From Geneva, Claire Duell reports.
According to the UN, life is beginning to return to normal in Dili as the Australian peacekeepers strengthen their grip on the capital. People are coming down from the hills for food and medical aid, but they leave after sunset, too fearful to remain. Although the UN aid operation is gathering momentum, spokesman Chris Yanofsky says it's too dangerous to work outside Dili.
Most of East Timor is basically for humanitarian aid workers a no-go area, and it will be so until the Australians and other peacekeepers have established control.
In West Timor, the UN has limited access to the camps run by Jakarta, and it fears many of the East Timorese are being held there against their will. For NPR News, this is Claire Duell in Geneva.
On Wall Street, the Dow is down 179 points. This is NPR. In NPR's business update, the Private Conference Board says the confidence of American consumers fell in September for the third month in a row. Analysts say the drop could reflect concern about higher interest rates. NPR's Jim Zarole reports from New York.
According to the report, the Consumer Confidence Index fell to 134.2 in September from 136 the month before. The survey said consumers were slightly more confident about current economic conditions than they had been in August, but they were significantly less confident about growth down the road. The decline could reflect the recent increase in interest rates. The Federal Reserve raised rates twice over the summer and could do so again next week. The index is closely watched by economists because consumer spending makes up two-thirds of the economy, and a decline in consumer confidence can lead to a slowdown in growth. Despite the recent drop, conference board officials say the index remains high, reflecting an economy that's been generally healthy. Jim Zaroli, NPR News, New York.
A federal judge has rejected the proposed settlement to a class action lawsuit against the maker of the diet pill Redux. Interneuron Pharmaceuticals is trying to settle the case. At the same time, a bigger and larger defendant, American Home Products, is settling a similar case for its drug, Fen-Phen. It's alleged the drugs cause heart problems in patients. The judge has ruled that the proposed settlement has given far too rosy a picture of what victims might be eligible to receive in damages. The price of gold continues to climb. The closing price of the precious metal on the London Stock Exchange was $301. That's up more than $13 from this morning. I'm Corva Coleman in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from this and other NPR member stations. Contributors include the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation, supporting public understanding of technology, industry, and economic growth.
This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Melinda Pencava. This is day two of the extradition hearing for former Chilean dictator Augusto Pinochet. A court in London is hearing testimony on whether to extradite Pinochet to Spain, where he would stand trial for human rights abuses while he ruled in Chile. His accusers charge that while Pinochet did not actually commit torture himself, thousands of people were tortured, killed, or disappeared during his 17-year rule. This extradition trial concerns these human rights abuses, torture in more plain language, that occurred after December of 1988. That's because it was only after that time that Britain agreed to an international convention against torture. This case is the first time that one country, Spain, is aiming to try the leader of another country for acts committed within that other country's borders. Human rights activists have applauded this, saying it's the only way to put teeth into that convention against torture. But as a potentially precedent-setting case, this raises some other issues. For one, it cuts into the long-standing international law that generally has given heads of state the sovereign right to avoid prosecution for what they do within their borders. And then, who decides which leaders are due for trial? The names Idi Amin and Suharto come up, but could a U.S. president be so charged as well? And then, what countries have the moral right to bring such charges? Spain never brought anyone to trial for human rights abuses under the decades of Francisco Franco's dictatorship. Now, though, it is a Spanish magistrate who wants to try Augusto Pinochet. With us this hour of Talk of the Nation, we have Abraham Sofer, senior fellow at the Hoover Institute, who served as legal advisor to the U.S. Department of State under George Shultz from 1985 until 1990. Abraham Sofer joins us from our New York bureau. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Good morning.
And Jim Feinerman, who is James Morita Professor of International and Asian Legal Studies at Georgetown University. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Glad to be here.
And you may join us, as always, as well. The number is 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. Well, as I said, this hour we wanted to discuss what kind of precedent this Pinochet case would create. And the question would be, where could it go from here? If, in fact, Pinochet is extradited to Spain, if Britain agrees to do that, and if he is put on trial there, what kind of precedent are we looking at here? James Feinerman?
Well, two things about where the case may go from here. If he is extradited, he may go to Spain. But just today, Chilean legal advisor Jaime Lagos announced that they're trying to take this case from the Spanish hands to the International Court of Justice in The Hague. So there could be another sort of jurisdictional battle at the outset.
Now, is Chile trying to go to the International Court at The Hague to say this kind of extradition should not happen, or we would like The Hague to try Pinochet?
No, they're instituting proceedings against Spain, mm-hmm. saying that they don't want the Spaniards to take this case, and presumably when assuming Pinochet is returned to Chile, they're not going to put him on trial there.
Mm-hmm. So beyond that, but if the extradition were to go through, what kind of precedent do we have here?
Well, it's quite awe-inspiring in some ways, because it suggests for the first time that heads of state may be responsible for their actions inside their borders under some sort of international legal standard, regardless of whether the acts that they did constituted crimes in their own country or whether subsequently to their leading office they could be tried under their own national laws.
Mm-hmm. Abraham Sofer, do you see problems with this? This is quite a departure from international law as we understand it to this point.
Well, there are problems and complications, but it's very important to keep the case in context. If I could just give you one little minute of context here. Mm-hmm. This is an extradition proceeding. And in an extradition proceeding, a requesting state, in this case Spain, has a treaty with a requested state, England, to extradite persons for trial on charges of conduct that's criminal in both states. And in this case, Spain has made four different assertions of crimes, only one of which has been considered permissible, sufficient on its face, the torture assertions. And then the immunity issue was decided, and it was concluded that a former head of state would not be immune for acts of torture that occurred after the torture convention was implemented in both the requesting state and the requested state, and incidentally in the state where the torture occurred as well. So, yes, it is a very precedent-setting decision, but one which actually takes the law one step forward. It isn't a radical new thing. It really makes a lot of sense that an official who commits torture after the country has agreed that official acts of torture are criminal internationally, after the country in which he is acting has agreed that to that, should not be immune for those acts after that time.
Jim Fine.
So I don't think it's radical. I think it's important, but proper.
Well, I agree it's a logical next step, but I think the big question here is what it means for the international community when heads of state are exposed to this. I mean, if we go back even to the Nuremberg trials, people who were fairly high up but were not themselves heads of state or heads of government at the time were put on trial, and more recently, especially under our own law, for example, in the Filarctica case, it's been relatively low-level people who have been put on trial for actually perpetrating individual acts of torture. And to step back and move up several levels from that and put heads of government who will argue, as I'm sure Pinochet will, that there are many stages removed and may have not had personal individualized knowledge of the torture that went on their watch. It really does take things, I think, several steps into the future.
Indeed. Reuters is reporting today that Augusto Pinochet's attorneys were making the case that this may have been, it was not necessarily torture, it was police brutality, and police brutality happens in a number of countries. In Chile today, they said, in Spain, and perhaps in the UK.
There's a different reason for that. Their concern there is one which I share, and that is that the Spanish prosecutor has repeatedly amended his charges. He's now on his eighth version of charges or something like that. And now they're claiming that people who were tortured in the prisons of Chile after 1988, which is 10 years after Pinochet had already consolidated power, and 1 year after the same year he had allowed a referendum, that those tortures were under Pinochet's watch. And, you know, that is a claim that should be tested on an evidentiary basis. But I'm very concerned that in England, given the European Convention on Extradition, it will not be tested because the Spanish government doesn't even have to allege evidence that's sufficient to show probable cause that he was responsible for those tortures. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of very serious factual issues in the case. And I agree that this is a complicating precedent. It's complicating for leaders, former leaders, not present leaders. It's complicating for diplomats, former diplomats. And it's complicating for states that want to engage in reconciliation through agreements that confer immunity. It's complicating. But it's manageable in principle. What's really upsetting is to see a politically driven prosecution like this, where there have been 8 amendments of an extradition process, and where on its face it's very, very dubious that there is a case that Pinochet was responsible for torture after 1988.
So this brings us to the question of who is going to decide who is, say, the next world leader or slash despot, in whatever your view might be, who would be brought up on charges. I mean, where can we go? Fidel Castro's name is brought up by Cuban exiles in the U.S., saying, well, there are human rights abuses that have happened there, and if he leaves Cuba and goes to some other country, that he should face the same thing that Pinochet is facing.
Well, he would be immune. He's a sitting head of state.
Okay.
And the only time a sitting head of state is subject to a danger is if the UN Security Council, acting under Chapter 7, concludes that a tribunal should be set up to try a sitting head of state, like Milosevic, for international crimes. And that, of course, has happened now twice in the last few years in Rwanda and in Yugoslavia. And we've gotten used to that. There's nothing unprincipled about that. The Security Council has that authority.
So would we have the phenomenon then? We might have a number of leaders who, because of this, would be unwilling to leave office, to leave power.
That's right.
And because they don't want to be a former head of state, in which case they could come under this Pinochet precedent here.
There's a danger to that. Sorry, Jim.
I think that there is a danger of that. But the other thing that it raises questions about is, what about people who aren't heads of state but are still senior government figures? One example that comes to mind is the former premier of China, who would have been as that head of government, Li Peng, who is now, like Pinochet, who was a senator in the Chilean legislature. He's the head of China's National People's Congress, the head of the legislative branch of the government. So not the head of state, not the head of government. If he travels abroad, can someone try and bring him up on charges, for example, for torture and other things that happened in connection with the Tiananmen incident in China 10 years ago?
Well, if China does not want that to happen, it should not sign the torture convention, which makes it an international crime, which China and every other member of that convention agrees to prosecute wherever the crime occurs. So I presented the torture convention to the U.S. Senate, and the issue of immunity did not arise as such, but it was understood that the torture convention was aimed at officials.
1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. We're talking today with Abraham Sofer and Jim Feinerman about what could be a precedent-setting case with Augusto Pinochet, his extradition trial underway right now in London. Let's go to Oakland, though. Actually, we can't go to Oakland. I tried that. We'll go to Mark in San Francisco. Hi there, Mark.
Hi there. I have a question for your guest. About Orlando Letelier and Ronnie Moffitt. Do you think there's a case for the United States now that we have recently declassified information which indicates that we're aware that that Pinochet ordered the assassination of these two people, one of whom, of course, was an ex-politician, the ex-defense minister under the government of Salvador Allende?
And that was in the U.S., that was in D.C.
That was in Washington, D.C.,
exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I should let Abe Sofer handle this, but I would just say initially that since we're not a signatory to the torture convention, one of the few states that isn't, we're perhaps oddly out of the bargaining process that might go on here.
Abe
well,
Sofer?
We have always believed that the Pinochet administration was responsible. I'm not talking about him personally, but maybe a lot of people in our government believe him personally as well, for the bombing of Letelier. And we pursued that case vigorously on the civil and criminal sides. We settled the civil case during my tenure in the State Department, I'm happy to say, with the Pinochet administration. And the criminal case continues. There certainly is no immunity for people who aren't heads of state, who engage in a murder in a foreign country. And so I think, yes, indeed, all the people involved in that, and under this, it is not a torture, so Pinochet himself would not be subject to prosecution under the theory he's being prosecuted in England.
Mm-hmm. Refresh your memories. What did the U.S. get in the settlement with Chile over that?
Well, the U.S. didn't get anything. We represented the claimants, the widow of Moffitt, and they got monetary compensation, substantial monetary compensation that they were pleased with.
All right. You're listening to Talk of the Nation. Abraham Sofer and Jim Finerman are our guests today. We're going to take a short break right now. When we come back, we'll talk with a spokesperson for Amnesty International about the Pinochet extradition hearing underway right now in London. And we will get to more of your calls. That number is 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. If you'd like to drop us an email to comment on this show or shows you'd like to hear, that address is TOTN@npr.org. At 21 minutes past the hour, it's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Welcome back to Talk of the Nation. I'm Melinda Pencava. Today we're talking about the extradition hearing of former Chilean dictator Augusto Pinochet. It began yesterday in London. We're talking about its implications for future cases. Joining us now is Brendan Paddy, official spokesman for Amnesty International, who is attending Pinochet's trial in London. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hello.
Well, I'd like to know, I imagine that you're rather happy that things have come to this pass with a human rights case of this stature being tried or being in an extradition phase right now. Curious what other leaders in the world you anticipate would face a similar situation as Augusto Pinochet?
Well, we're Amnesty International. I wouldn't say that we're putting together a hit list exactly. But, I mean, there certainly are other situations we can see around the world now which certainly may call for similar types of attention. I mean, we've seen the developments in Kosovo. We're seeing similar developments now in East Timor. And clearly, Amnesty International's line on this has always been, if people who are responsible for these kinds of abuses are not held to account, then these kinds of abuses will simply keep happening.
Now, talk about Kosovo a little bit. How would you separate that out from what might happen with war crimes?
Well, I think the situation in Kosovo is an interesting one in that we actually have an ad hoc tribunal. We have the tribunal for the former Yugoslavia, which is looking into war crimes and crimes against humanity there. Now, that's an extremely positive step, but I think what we really need, and what is now in train, although not in place, is an international criminal court that is permanently established. So we no longer have a case of the UK having to try Pinochet, or Spain having to try Pinochet, or Chile refusing to try Pinochet. We have an international court, and so when crimes of this magnitude are committed, you go to the international court, and you don't have to worry about doing these things in a national jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm. There is some concern that many countries that might face charges? Would we see a spate of such trials?
I think what we'd see is a very cautious approach. I think we've seen very slow progress towards actual enforcement of international law. The law against torture has been on the books for many years, as has the law against genocide. But only now are we just beginning to see these kinds of crimes actually begin to be prosecuted. And I think you would see the court acting very cautiously. The last thing they would want to do was in any way damage their own reputation or damage the cause of justice which they were trying to further.
Mm-hmm. What do you think is going to be the toughest obstacle in this Pinochet case?
Well, I think the toughest obstacle, in a way, has already been surmounted. I mean, what we have had in Britain is a decision twice now by the highest court in the land that, in fact, there is no immunity for crimes against humanity, such as torture, which, of course, is the main crime of which Pinochet is accused. And I think that sets an exceedingly important precedent. And really, although there are a few questions that need to be looked at in the extradition process itself, I think the biggest concern now is actually about technicalities rather than the legal principles.
Mm-hmm. Well, as you likely know, the defense from the Pinochet camp today was that this wasn't torture. It was another example of police brutality, which happens in many countries.
Well, I think you can draw a distinction between the police using their truncheons perhaps a little too heavily on the streets or indeed even in the cells, and somebody having electrodes attached to their genitals and to their lips and to their nipples and being subject to such severe electroshock torture that they actually die as a consequence. I think there's a fairly clear distinction between those things, and I think to describe what happened in Chile as police brutality is to make a nonsense of it.
So do you think that clear distinction is what might calm some people who say, well, wait, you know, if you're going after one person in Chile and trying to try him in Spain, what's to keep, say, a former U.S. president from being tried in another country?
Well, I think in Pinochet's case, what they will have to prove is that there was systematic torture in Chile while he was in command of the country and indeed in command of the army, and that he had it both within his power to stop those crimes and that he failed to do so. And that is the standard they will have to meet. It's not simply a question of something having gone wrong at some stage during the time he was president. It's a question of proving that he had responsibility for what was going on and he did not act to stop the things that were going on from happening.
Mm-hmm. As this has been unfolding, there has been some talk about perhaps Chile trying Pinochet itself.
Mm. Well, I think obviously even Amnesty International would say, in an ideal world, that is the way that this should have been dealt with. But of course, Pinochet wasn't tried. He ruled for a very long time, and one of the things that he did was pass an amnesty law through which he and most of the people who worked with him are not subject to prosecution. So I think we have very serious concerns about claims from Chile that they could prosecute him. They've had many years to do so, and they've made very little progress towards it.
Brendan Paddy, thanks for joining us.
Not at all.
Brendan Paddy with Amnesty and Human Rights Watch was Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch were instrumental in gathering and presenting evidence against Augusto Pinochet. Brendan Paddy joined us from his home in London. Our guests this hour are Abraham Sofer, senior fellow at the Hoover Institute and former legal advisor at the State Department, and Jim Feinerman, James Morita professor of international and Asian legal studies at Georgetown University. If you'd like to join the conversation, our number here is 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. Let's go to Sharmishta in Chicago. Hi there. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hi. I have a question about the Pinochet trial regarding what it means for Western policy. Does the trial mean that the Western allies now wish to apologize for their Cold War policies of supporting bloodthirsty dictators around the Third World? I mean, after all, Pinochet was the darling of the Western allies in the fight against communism. So what is the significance of this trial for Western policy? Thank you.
Thank you so much. Abe Sofer?
Well, he wasn't the darling of the State Department when I was there. We were trying very hard to convince him to give up and get out, and we succeeded. We got him Secretary Schultz, and there were many fine ambassadors worked on this, got him to have a referendum and surrender power in a peaceful way. And part of that was an understanding that he would become a senator with immunity within Chile. Now, what's going on here does, on its face, appear to undermine the possibility of such reconciliations. And that really would be a difficult question that we have to address. I frankly believe that states can and should have to give immunity much more carefully than they've been doing it, that they should negotiate with other interested states. And if they want a worldwide immunity for their former heads of state, they should go to the UN and get the blessing of the Security Council. I think immunity should be available in such situations, but it should be much more carefully doled out.
Jim Feinerman?
Well, I think there is a danger. So far, General Pinochet has kept his powder dry and hasn't named any names or told any stories about the early days of his administration. But there have been suggestions that perhaps a predecessor, long before Abe Sofer and George Shultz, with the State Department Secretary Kissinger, may have given him different kinds of assurances and encouragements about the initial stages of the Chilean coup. And another breaking story over the weekend suggested that the same thing may have come also from Secretary Kissinger and President Ford with respect to Suharto's takeover of East Timor in Indonesia. So these things, people who want to settle scores or who feel that they're being made scapegoats may start to bring down the whole story of the Cold War support that was previously more covert.
Yeah, Abraham Sofer, if you were still in government, in the State Department, would you be happy with this turn of events, with what we see happening with the Pinochet extradition and enforcing that convention on torture? Or does that make, you know, the routes of diplomacy more difficult?
It might make diplomacy more difficult, but we're living in a time where immunities are being narrowed because states, sovereign states, are deciding that there are other interests in the world than merely the efficient operation of government. And the narrowing has been quite responsible. I mean, all this does is it says a former head of state, who would be subject, incidentally, to suit for non-official conduct, is immune for all official conduct except conduct that amounts to torture under the Torture Convention, because the Torture Convention was written in terms of official conduct. So, I mean, yes, I think it's the right principle, and I would support it. But what concerns me here is that the Spanish government is alleging acts of torture after 1988, and the European Convention appears to block the British courts from testing the sufficiency of their evidence. I would suggest that the British ought to try Pinochet themselves. They should not extradite him to a country that has made repeated allegations that are legally insufficient, to a prosecutor that's a socialist and been out to get Pinochet for years and years, not only because it's unfair, but because when you narrow immunities, what you want to watch out for is that you don't create a fear of politically driven prosecutions, because immunities are designed not to keep people who are guilty protected, but to keep people who aren't guilty from being pursued politically. And that's the danger of this case, right there.
1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. Marty is with us in St. Augustine, Florida.
Love your program, and I agree with your guest's previous comment, very well put. What I don't like about the Spain trying to bring up General Pinochet on charges is, to me, it's just a clear-cut example, a dangerous harbinger of the new world order, the world government trying to show its muscle. If General Pinochet, who we all know, if we read our history books, did a very good job of correcting the ills done by Salvador Allende and his gang, if the people of Chile thought that the man was guilty of charges, I would have liked to have seen the people do what was done to the generals in Argentina when they lost the war against Britain during the Falklands War. If I'm not mistaken, those generals went to jail for causing a lot of problems for Argentina. I would have liked to have seen that happen in Chile if the legitimate authorities thought that the general did something wrong.
Well, you know, you mentioned the history books, and there are the history books that would suggest that, you know, that Pinochet's rise to power was unjust, coming after Allende. But when it comes to trying to bring the case, there is evidence. And what if there is evidence of torture? You had Pinochet, who is a senator, and he's supposed to have control over 150,000 soldiers or police in Chile.
Well, what I'm trying.
So, is it likely that Chile would have ever brought him up on any of those allegations of torture?
I think that's an internal problem, and I'm still trying to figure out how Spain is putting a hold on General Pinochet, and they want to try him in Spain. From what I know of the law, he did not at any time commit any crimes in Spain. But if we contextualize the picture and make it in the world picture, torture, then we could look at the New World Order, the world government, and say, yes, they said he did something wrong, and according to, it's like whoever has the power, he did something wrong according to them. But I don't see him as having done anything wrong in the venue of Chile. I think that would have been the venue to try him in, and I just don't like what's going on, and I see this as the boogeyman taking off the sheet and showing that he's the boogeyman being the world government and using their stooge as Spain, which is talked of as the future head of the world government.
Well, Jim Feinerman?
Well, I think that this demonstrates some of the problems of the eroding concepts of sovereignty. I agree with Abe Sofer about that, and this sort of new regime. The original complaint, actually, was brought by a Spanish judge to the British authorities, did involve a number of instances of torture and even murder of Spanish citizens. All those were thrown out when the House of Lords decided that only those cases that had arisen after Britain ratified the convention in late 1988 could go forward. So the cases involving Spaniards were knocked out, but they did make a case originally that involved some relationship with Spain. The larger question, though, is that the flip side of this this sort of welcome erosion of sovereignty and the sort of impunity rather than immunity that heads of state used to enjoy for even the most outrageous acts is that now the new conventions, for example, against torture, couple that with a kind of universal jurisdiction. So anybody in any country, anywhere in the world, at least that's become a signatory to these international human rights agreements, has jurisdiction, arguably, and they don't have to show a connection. They can say that, you know, as citizens of the world who are concerned about these human rights issues, we now have the jurisdiction under international law to bring these people to the bar of justice anywhere that's willing to do it for us.
1-800-989-8255. Tom in Glendale, California. Hi, Tom.
Good morning.
Morning.
A couple points. You made the example that the people tried at Nuremberg were not heads of state. That's true, but if Adolf Hitler had been brought into Nuremberg in shackles rather than burnt body, suicide, and the last days of Berlin, he would have been tried and this precedence would have been established 50 years ago. I think what they're doing to Pinochet is excellent. You do have to be careful about the political repercussions of allowing this to be instituted and used too often. For example, in a different world's case, Lady Thatcher could be put on trial because of the documented cases of torture of the Irish in Northern Ireland by the British Army, by the SAS, by the RUC, that have been documented in a multiple set of reports by Amnesty International, the shoot-to-kill policy.
And Margaret Thatcher is among the leaders who has said that Pinochet should not be tried in this case. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Go ahead, Tom. I just had to take care of some business.
Oh, no, and I think you need to do these kind of things. And the sad thing is that so many of the people in the category of Pinochet rest in a very gray area when it comes to our own country, because we trained all these police in the School of the Americas. We supported numbers of heinous people. If you want to look at Batista before Castro came to power, Trujillo, Pinochet, you can almost look at any country in South or Central America and some in Africa. We were so narrow-visioned into, if you are anti-communist, you are our friend, that we drove some people who were socialists but not necessarily in the Russian camp into their arms, and we embraced some very, very terrible sorts of totalitarian governments that were rightist and pro-America because of the Cold War. And that's a legacy we have to get past. Supporting this kind of legislation and supporting a world court will close the book on having friends that you look the other way on because you have common enemies.
Do you think it'll bring an end to that?
It will bring an end to it, but it may make it less of a easy policy for people to do if people know that they can be hunted down around the world. I mean, I'd be very happy if people couldn't walk out of their armed compounds and had to stay in countries that were under economic embargo, because it might start to have an interesting effect on the next wave of general who becomes vice president, who becomes the head of state in less than democratic ways of doing it. Mm-hmm. You're always going to have this problem because there are evil people and power corrupts, and Aristotle's been right for 2,000 years.
Right. Well, Abe Sofer?
Well, in principle, I agree with that. I think that we do have to hold people more accountable in this world. There have been millions and millions of people murdered since the Second World War with impunity, and we need to do much more about it, and we're responsible for part of it, yes. But We have to go carefully. We have to abide by the rules that we establish, and we can't pretend. If we set up an ICC, an International Criminal Court, and we allow 60 states to decide what's criminal, we can have a politically driven, awful thing that'll hurt human rights in the long run.
And you're listening to Talk of the Nation. I'm Melinda Penkava. Our guests are Abraham Sofair and Jim Feinerman. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we will talk with a reporter in Santiago, Chile, about public reaction there to the Pinochet case. And we will get to more of your calls. The number is 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. At 40 minutes past the hour, it's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, PBS presenting John Paul II, the Millennial Pope, a frontline look at the Pope's life and times, tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern on PBS. Local times may vary. Ericsson, more than 100,000 employees in more than 140 countries providing telecommunications for the new world. Ericsson helps you to make yourself heard. And Time Magazine, this week, Bill Bradley, a profile of the candidate and what is behind his quest for the nomination. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
A new biography of Ronald Reagan has generated more controversy over its narrative technique than over the facts it contains. Edmund Morris's book Dutch features the author himself as a fictionalized character. Do the dangers of fictionalizing history outweigh the benefits of a more coherent story? I'm Melinda Penkava. We'll examine the intersection of truth, fiction, and history. Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Welcome back to Talk of the Nation. I'm Melinda Penkava. At this time tomorrow, we'll be taking a look at the implications of all the new reproductive choices that modern research has developed. Doctors have now successfully reimplanted ovarian tissue in a woman, apparently restoring her fertility and reversing early menopause. The rules nature left us for on when and how we can have children no longer seem to apply. And we'll be looking at what it all means for future generations and relations between men and women. Today, we're talking about the Pinochet extradition hearing going on in London and the questions this is raising over sovereignty and who has legal jurisdiction over international crimes. Joining us now from Santiago, Chile, is Carolina Pica, who has been covering the Pinochet trial for the past year. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, good afternoon.
Afternoon. Well, tell us about the reaction within Chile on what has been happening in London with Augusto Pinochet.
Here in Chile, you see two very distinct reactions. You have, I wouldn't be able to tell you if it's 50-50, but you have those people that want Pinochet brought to justice, and it doesn't matter where. And then you have the other people that believe that he should be tried in a Chilean court, and that no other country has jurisdiction over over matters that occurred in Chile.
And is it likely that Augusto Pinochet would be tried in Chile?
Well, right now, if he were to come back today, no, because he has, as a senator, he has privileges that make him immune to any legal actions against him. So a court would have to first strip him of his senatorial privileges.
I'm wondering if there are any parallels to what we had seen during the Kosovo War, where you had people that disagreed with Milosevic who rallied round him because there was a common enemy that NATO was bombing in Yugoslavia. Are we seeing a similar thing in Chile? People who were not happy with Pinochet but yet rally around that and think he ought not be tried elsewhere?
Yes, and that's exactly the government's position. They don't approve. It's an opposition government. They don't approve of what he did, yet they do defend the fact that Chile has legal jurisdiction over what happened here.
Mm-hmm. But as you say, because he's a senator, if he went back there, he would not face trial, and he is 83 years old, too, we should point out. So he'd probably not ever face trial?
Things are changing right now. I believe there are about 42 cases against him right now, and the judge investigating all of these cases has taken a slightly different view than had been taken in previous years.
How so?
According to the amnesty law that was passed during the Pinochet government, all military officials were immune from prosecution for murder. But this judge reinterpreted the law that they are not immune from charges of kidnapping, and that's charges that are being brought up.
Mm-hmm. I understand that Chile's foreign minister, Juan Gabriel Valdez, is calling Spain's efforts in this arrogant and pretentious. Most of the anger is toward Spain in Chile about this?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is the fact that they pretend to have jurisdiction over legal matters.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, Carolina Pica, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
Carolina Pica covers the Pinochet trial from Santiago, Chile. We continue talking this hour with Abraham Sofer and Jim Feinerman and taking your calls, 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. Andreas is in Santa Clara, California. Hi there, Andreas.
Yes, hello. How are you?
Okay, how are you?
Very good, thanks. What I wanted to say was I grew up in Chile. I was in Chile in 1973 when the coup d'etat occurred. And so I've been through the whole thing. I've been in the United States for 16 years now, so I cannot speak for all Chileans. I went to Chile in February, and I did talk to people, my relatives and friends, about this thing with Pinochet. And because of the way that Chileans like to deal with things, this is very appropriate for a lot of them. Like the Carolina said, and the previous person on the phone said, they would not try Pinochet now. That's not a surprise for me. They would. I almost feel like they would receive him as a hero, because if he were to go back to Chile, they would think that they defeated the system. So he would be welcome as a hero by many people. And the way that Chileans like to think about things, they're not like, you know, like the United States, where people like to talk about the dirt that happens in the government and they bring it out and their books published about this and that. And so everybody talks about it, and it's a sort of a healing process. And in Chile, people think if you don't talk about it, it'll go away, it's okay. And some of them are happy that this is being taken outside the country so people can forget about it, you know, so he's there, who cares. The other thing is that people are still afraid in Chile regarding when it comes to the military and all. They know that Pinochet has a lot of power. They don't want to go against him because they know that if they do, that there's a danger of the whole thing repeating all over again. A lot of the people say there, no, that would not happen, but it could. And so they are afraid of what the military would do.
Well, I'm curious about your own personal view as someone who was born in Chile. You've heard the charges, and it's not like the dirt that we had with, say, Monica Lewinsky here in the States. I mean, these are charges of torture. These are charges of people dying and disappearing and being tortured.
Yeah.
That said, do you think he ought to be brought? Do you personally think he ought to be brought to trial?
In fact, I feel like the whole thing that's going on, every Chilean should only feel ashamed that this whole thing is being taken outside the country to be dealt with. You know, they were almost waiting for something like this to happen. Who is going to take care of this? And it's funny that Pinochet, like a month before he was arrested in London, he, in an interview, I believe, I forget what magazine it was, I read an interview where he said he liked the English people because of their sense of justice. Well, that really came back and haunted him exactly a month later. I think that the guy should have been put in jail or sentenced to death a long time ago. I don't know what people were waiting and then allow him to be a senator and all that. The other thing I wanted to say is that we look back and we criticize and we talk about all these things, but I think what one thing that we should all think about is look forward and just keep in mind that as we speak, this very moment, some governments, including the U.S. government and European governments, are funding and supporting governments outside, which eventually are going to turn sour, and we're going to have more Pinochets, and then people are going to start wondering, well, how did that happen? Well, hello, you know? That's what I'm always surprised to hear that Pinochet, and then there's this guy in Indonesia, and then this guy somewhere else, and when are people going to get a clue? These things are happening all the time.
Well, Andreas, thanks for your call. I'd like to put some of your comments to our guests.
Thank you so much.
Abraham Sofer?
Well, easier said than done. I mean, you can be frivolous about lightheaded about how we should have gotten Pinochet out of office and tried him and executed him. But the fact of the matter is that if we had taken that attitude and the Chilean leadership, democratic leadership, had taken that attitude in the 1980s, we wouldn't have a democratic Chile right now, in all likelihood. He'd still be in control, and it would be a tragedy.
Jim Fonderman?
Well, I agree, and I think that, although unlike Andreas, I'm not a Chilean, and I speak with the perspective of an outsider, I think that it's difficult for me to judge whether the international community in its quest for certain human rights values should trump the choices that Chileans have made about their own future and how to move forward from this horrible chapter in Chilean history. I think also it raises the question, which Andreas himself raised, if Pinochet does return or is returned somehow through the process, will there be more violence and retribution for the people who sought to try and put him on trial, which will renew the cycle of violence? And finally, there's the question that has just been raised by Judge Sofer about whether or not future Pinochets will be willing to step down. They won't if they think that they can't get a done deal and that the deals that they make won't be protected or can be sort of reviewed in the International Court of Justice.
So that gets us to this question. Is what we're seeing being unveiled or worked out right now step by step on this enforcement of the Convention on Torture, is that the most workable thing we have in place to deal with countries that don't take their former leaders to task for torture that happened while they were in charge? Is that the only tool available, and is there some way to fine tune it?
No, it is a tool, and it's a perfectly legitimate tool. What it is going to do, though, it is going to have our Senate and every other legislature and president around the world look at these human rights treaties much more critically. And one of the things we want to be able to argue to them when we advocate these treaties is that they are going to be applied with a sense of objectivity and professionalism and not politically driven, anything goes, alleging meanings of the Genocide Convention that are totally untenable on their face, etc. So you can't just think of the one guy you want to get. You want to think about a system of law that's going to grow creatively and constructively over time.
And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Derek in Denton, Texas. Hi there, Derek.
Hi. I have a question for your guests. It's a really interesting program. I'm wondering, looking back at our own country from an international perspective, just how vulnerable would our present sitting head of state be for such events as the atrocities of the sustained military-like attack on the Branch Davidians, where they played sounds of dying animals and had spotlights focused on the compound? Are there any other head of states that we have had who would be vulnerable? And I'll listen off the air.
Thank you, Derek.
Thank you.
Jim Fonderman?
Well, I think that in most cases, our presidents would probably get off the hook on the attenuated chain of command arguments and the fact that they don't directly supervise the work of, say, local police. But it becomes a closer question when the FBI or other federal agencies are involved. And don't forget that there's also the possibility, given the breadth of this convention, that an American president could be put on trial for things that were done by American forces abroad. I mean, ex-President Johnson, after the Vietnam War, for example, had he lived that long, put on trial for things that happened under American command, carried out by South Vietnamese troops when the war was being prosecuted. It's not inconceivable, although it seems highly unlikely.
Why would that not come under war crimes, then, as opposed to the tort, this kind of arrangement?
Well, simply put, I think war crimes are you know, genocidal. They're crimes against a class of people or group of people because of their race or ethnicity, whereas these are much broader in effect. Any kind of individuated case of just wanton, senseless torture can be prosecuted.
Koresh could argue that he's a religious group, that this was a religious group and this was an effort to destroy a religious group. They could argue that, and but the president, any sitting president, would be immune. A former president who actually ordered such an attack, let's say that it was an effort to destroy a religious group, would fall within that definition. I obviously do not believe that, however ill-considered that attack was, and I totally disagreed with it and think it was an abominable thing to do, that it was an effort to destroy them as a religious group. But if you could make that factual case, it would be genocide.
Well, in the remaining moments, I just wanted to ask your considered opinions on whether you think that Augusto Pinochet, when the decision comes down sometime next month, is he going to be extradited? Jim Feinerman?
Well, it's very hard to say. I think the point that's already been raised several times by Judge Sofer is an important one, and that is that there's an evidentiary standard that we tend to hold sacred in the common law in both sides of the Atlantic that seems to be violated by this lower European standard.
And Abraham Sofer?
That's my concern. I think he, you know, if you look at it, it looks like he'll be extradited, and it will be a really unfortunate thing if, in fact, they don't have the evidence to prosecute successfully.
Well, I think we're going to have to end on that note. Thank you both for joining us, Abraham Sofer and Jim Feinerman. Thanks.
Glad to be here.
Abraham Sofer, senior fellow at the Hoover Institute and former legal advisor under Secretary of State George Shultz, joined us from the New York Bureau. Jim Feinerman, James Morita Professor of International and Asian Legal Studies at Georgetown University, was here in Studio 3A. Earlier, we spoke with Brendan Paddy in London with Amnesty International and Carolina Pica, a reporter based in Santiago, Chile, who's been covering the Pinochet trial. In Washington, I'm Melinda Pencava, NPR News.
This program is a production of National Public Radio. The views expressed are not necessarily those of NPR, the underwriters, or this broadcast station. NPR is solely responsible for this program. Tapes and transcripts of Talk of the Nation are available. Call anytime, toll-free, 1-877-NPR-TEXT. That's 1-877-NPR-TEXT.
Support for National Public Radio comes from NPR stations and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, EBSCO Information Services, providing integrated information management through subscription services and reference database development and production, on the web at EBSCO.com. The W. Alton Jones Foundation, supporting public understanding of the importance of healthy ecosystems for people's lives, www.wajones.org. And the Geraldine R. Dodge Foundation for reporting on biological resource issues. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
A New York doctor has successfully re-implanted ovarian tissue in a 29-year-old woman, apparently restoring her fertility and reversing early menopause. The procedure is only the latest in a series of breakthroughs from artificial insemination to frozen embryos that are redefining how we reproduce. I'm Melinda Pencava. Join us to discuss the implications of these new reproductive choices. Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.